Hello, and welcome back to We Are the Weirdos, Mister, the podcast for all things cult, camp, queer, and creepy. I am your host, Hillary Michelle Post, and today I'm joined by my sister, Lace Mason. How are you doing today, Lacey?
Peachy Keen, what up, dog?
I guess we're doing as well as can be expected, considering.
Yeah.
We are recording this on Friday the 24th. The Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade today, and so we're grouchy, as everyone should be. If you're not grouchy, you're listening to the wrong fucking podcast.
Yep. I was just going to say that. If you're not pissed or scared about something, we don't got shit to talk about.
Yeah. Bye. But nevertheless, we're going to talk about a movie about a situation that proves that the justice system is flawed and fucked up. Today we're going to talk about the movie Party Monster. There's been a lot of discourse lately regarding true crime and whether or not it is exploitative and if it's wrong to enjoy it. And this discourse immediately made me think about this film and the real life murder that it's based on. The film came out in 2003, and it's based on two things. The 1998 documentary of the same name and the book Disco Bloodbath, later republished as Party Monster as well by James St. James. The documentary was made by Fenton Bailey and Randy Barbato, who also made this film. And they later went on to create the production company World of Wonder, who have made other hugely successful projects, but most notably RuPaul's Drag Race.
Uh-huh. Sam thought it was the Teddy Ruxpin people. He was really confused. Oh, okay, I understand. And I also didn't know there was a documentary. I'm, like, fuming right now, like, oh, yeah, I want to see.
Yeah, I'll send you a link to it. It's not streaming officially anywhere, but I'm pretty sure the whole thing's is uploaded to YouTube, so I'll send you a link.
Oh, okay.
You had seen this before you watched it today, right?
Yeah, like 20 years ago, you were like, hey, let's watch this movie. And we were like, okay. And that is the history of me and Party Monster.
Fair enough. I mean, I figured it was my influence that made you watch it.
Yeah.
To begin with, but did you remember most of it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of vivid.
Yeah, you don't forget things like that. I mean, I actually enjoyed it more this time than the last time, but because my brain's weird.
So I understand where dissenters of true crime are coming from, and I fully recognize how problematic all three of these pieces of media are. That being said, I fucking love them.
Yeah, me too.
They're such unbridled, entertaining trash. Like, these in particular. Other true crime things, my appreciation of varies depending on what it is. And I just can't help it. Especially the book, Disco Bloodbath, is hilarious and is a really amazing examination of trauma and drug addiction. And it shouldn't be discredited just because St. James is, like, flamboyant and comedic in the way he wrote it. A lot of people just, like, shrug it off, but it's a really, really good true crime book.
And it's more. I actually read it, believe it or not.
I was going to say, if you haven't, I would lend it to you because it's really good. It's entertaining.
Yeah.
So, a little background on the universe in which this movie is set. The Club Kids were a real group of people in the 80s and early 90s who would go to clubs and they would turn themselves into celebrities with bizarre antics and self-styled images. They made their entire livings based on the fact that they were club kids. They were party organizers, club owners, and talk show hosts like would pay them obscene amounts of money to simply show up and party. So the king of the Club Kids is Michael Alec, who is the main character of this movie and who committed a heinous crime. And did not get, we'll get into more about what happens to him, but did not get very much punishment. So this movie has a lot of criticism based on one thing I want to get out of the way is like the performances in this movie. They seem like really over the top until you see the people that they're pretending to be. And you're like, oh, spot on.
Right. Right.
Does it kind of suck that our two gay leads are played by two straight boys? Kind of sucks, but they are great actors and I love them both. And I like them in this movie.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of, the main character is Michael Alec, played by Macaulay Culkin. Have you seen his baby?
No, I don't think so.
He had a baby with Brenda Song, and he is so cute. I just saw paparazzi pictures of him the other day, and he's so cute and chubby and adorable.
Now I gotta Google who the fuck Brenda Song is.
She's a Disney girl. You recognize her if you saw her. She was on Sweet Life.
The exactly. Sweet Life girl?
Yeah.
Austin's got a boner for her.
Macaulay Culkin got that one. I think.
Oh, wow.
God. They must have a huge age difference that I never really thought about until just now.
That was my first question because I'm like, God, he's old, but you can have babies when you're old when you're a dude. But I wondered who he was breeding with. So, yeah, he's probably a good decade behind him.
So we'll go through the plot of the movie a little bit. I didn't take super detailed notes because the highs and lows of this movie are mainly in funny quotes and just bizarre things that happen in real life. So it starts with an interview with James St. James, played by Seth Green. And it's an exact replica of a shot from the documentary. Exactly the same location, same outfit, same everything. And a lot of the stuff that James St. James helped with the production of this film and a lot of the clothes that Seth wears, you'll notice look like really big on him. And it's because James St. James is very tiny, but not even as tiny as Seth, who's very little. So like, there's just some shots where he'll just be like, be wearing a blazer that, you know, probably looked fine on a normal person, but on Seth looks ridiculous because he looks like a little kid playing dress up. He's so tiny. I want to put him in my pocket.
Well, see, I didn't know that there was a documentary. And my biggest question about this movie when I first start watching it is like, why does it remind me of like a low budget Nickelodeon 90s show? But that's why, because it was, they were trying to make it look like a documentary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Very, especially because there's some shots in the movie that are directly from the documentary. Like anytime there's like news footage of the club kids, that's real footage from real parties and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it had to have like a lower budge, more guerrilla filmmaking type feel so that stuff like that could be integrated more seamlessly. So.
Ah, see?
Yeah. And the whole club kid aesthetic is very, like, little kids, 90s, colorful, pop ridiculousness. So even just their aesthetic is reminiscent of that whole era.
Right.
I love that first scene with James when he's, like, doing the sound check. And he's like, testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Testosterone, testicular cancer, test of the Dupervilles. And I had forgotten. So we have our little intro with James. And then there's like a smash cut of someone getting hit with a hammer and then blood pouring out of their head. And that's our main thrust of the movie is leading up to this murder. But I was just like, God, that's so grotesque. When you consider it as a real person, how...
I know.
It's fucked up, man.
Especially how he introduces it. He's like, let's just like get this part out of the way. You know, bad right. Shit's coming. It's like, oh my God.
Then we see scenes from Michael Alec's blood feast party, which was a real party he threw, where everyone is like all bloody and gory, and that's the theme of the party, right? And I love James's look with like the exposed brain and boobs.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
I think he looks awesome. Meanwhile, Michael looks like shit because it's at a point in the timeline, like later on, when Michael is really fucked up on drugs. So it's like a flash to the future before we flash back to when they first meet. Also, this was Macaulay Culkin's first starring role after like 9 years. He was in
That's
Richie.
why I had such a hard time with it the first time I watched it. I'm like, oh, Kevin, buddy, what happened to you?
Right? He was in Richie Rich, and then he was in nothing for like a decade. And then this is what he comes back and does. I think is very brave.
I do too.
But just unhinged. Just whew. So James arrives. We see James arrive at Michael's apartment. And him, he's narrating, and he says this is the night of my overdose. And they take tea and little bags of heroin and sit down in Michael's bedroom and do some drugs. And Michael tells James that he murdered Angel, the drug dealer. And James doesn't thinks it's a joke at first, but as it's starting to sink in, at the same time as he's realizing what had happened, he also ODs on the heroin and he kind of like blanks out. So Michael takes the opportunity to break the fourth wall and he starts to narrate the movie. And he talks about his childhood. And we see Michael's mom, Elkie, played by Diana Scarwood, who most people will know as Christine from Mommy Dearest.
Oh, right. Okay.
I love Elkie, like the real life Elkie and Elkie in this movie. I love her. She's so great. Adorable little accent. She's just this little blonde cherub, and I love her. How she created this monster, I don't know. She seems very sweet. But Michael's just going on about his childhood and how, like a the leader of his like Bible study group or his something, his church group took him back to his basement one day, and his mom was like, "I told you not to bring them here." And he's like, "Don't, you'll frighten him away."
That's fucked up.
And so James wakes up out of, breaks the fourth wall too, and he's like, "No, for the love of God, no. We're not going to start with Michael Alec's tragic childhood. I was molested." And James asserts that, he came to New York before Michael. He was the trendsetter. He paved the way for Michael. And he did. He was a celebutante before the whole, he was like the first wave of like nightlife celebrity before the club kids became a thing.
Right.
James St. James, the real St. James is his dad. He's like a trust fund baby. So he had a bunch of money and basically did nothing but frolic and party, and because that's he could afford to and look fabulous. But the long ongoing thread throughout the movie is that he wants to write the great American novel. So even before all this stuff happens, he aspires to be a writer. And after Disco Bloodbath, he did write a young adult novel that's really good that was turned into a movie, called Freak Show. It's about a teenage drag queen. It's really good.
Oh.
The movie is it's all right. It's not terrible. It's not as good as the book, but it's okay. So now we flash back to when Michael and James first met. James was, you know, fabulous and well known in the club scene, and Michael had just moved in town and was working as like a busboy at a club. And he introduces himself to James, and James agrees to meet with him for coffee to get to know each other and to like give him some guidance. So they meet at this little donut shop, right? Which is such a great place to set a scene because it's just so colorful and weird.
That's my favorite James outfit, by the way, is
Really?
that jacket that he wears, yeah, in that scene.
With his little hair, his funny like coif of hair that is either always pushed to one side or parted down the middle. He's just so cute. But reluctantly, James agrees to teach Michael about nightlife. So he tells him like the rules. He's like, if you take a picture. And all these rules are actually good rules to go by to in terms of like socialization. He's like, if you ever take a picture, make sure you're standing on the right. So when the photo is published, you'll be on the left, and then your name will be appear first. So it'll be like James St. James and blah blah blah. We're seen at blah blah blah. And he's like, don't take heroin. Don't wear white after Labor Day. Avoid purgation. Which he's just basically taking off things that everything that Jay Michael ends up ignoring. And then he describes how to work a room. He's like, you and your friend show up, you do a lap around the whole club and talk to everybody. And then you and your friend split up and go in opposite directions and go to all of your new friends and talk about how you can't find your friend. Oh my God, what am I going to do? I have to find my friend. Blah blah blah. And then you meet in the middle of the club, make a scene. Oh, we found each other. And then do another lap, telling everyone you found each other, and then you leave. He's like, it should take like 90 minutes tops. Do it every night for a month, and you'll be the t talk of the town. That's brilliant.
Very bright. So simple.
And like, especially if you're someone like me who doesn't like crowds, it's a good way to like get in, get out, meet everybody, have set goal, and then I don't have to stay very long. So Michaels decides that he's going to become a party promoter and decides he because he wants to be like Andy Warhol, right? So he decides to make his first superstar. Christina is his first superstar. Did you recognize who that was?
No, but I felt like I should.
It was Marilyn Manson.
Oh my God. Well, I didn't spend an absorbent amount of time staring at Marilyn Manson, so I forgive myself.
He, now we know Marilyn Manson is an abusive piece of shit, but it do. Does must be commented that he was a trooper and brought his own boobs and butt padding to the film to play this
Like
character,
you.
like you do, and his own blonde wig. He's like, yeah, I just had these laying around. Christina is insane,
I can't
and
believe you didn't notice that. Oh,
didn't notice it. I can't believe that Sam watched this with you.
man will do anything I want.
Oh, nice.
But what choice does he have? Is he going to sit in the other room by himself? No, he can watch whatever I want.
What a trooper. So Michael throws his first party in the basement of the Limelight, which at that point was not a very popular club. And James shows up and is pissed because like there's no one there, and Christina's on stage performing, just I say performing with quotation marks around it. She's just kind of standing up there going la la la. But when James, you know, bitches about the party being lame, Michael smashes something against the Oh, what are they called?
Sprinkler.
There you go, the sprinkler system, and sets the sprinklers off in this basement and floods this basement. A real thing that he did, by the way. Like Peter Gation, who is played by Dylan McDermott, who is 1,000 times hotter than Peter Gation. Peter Gation was like a not cute little nebbish guy, and Dylan McDermott is, you know, hot.
I never really, I guess I never thought much about him being hot, but in this movie he is, and I'm like, it's got to be the eye patch. I got that pirate thing going on. I'm like, damn, hey.
Hey, and he's like the token straight too. He's like
Right.
the only straight man character, so he just seems all like butch compared to everybody else. So we meet Peter and his wife Natasha, who's played by Mia Kirshner. Now, poor Mia Kirshner, both in this and in The L Word, she played Jenny in The L Word, who has to be like the most hated character in all of fiction. Jenny
Really?
Schle. Oh my God. Did you ever watch The L Word?
No, obviously.
You should. You would like it. But
Is that a
she's the
Showtime thing?
worst. I think so.
I got it free for another. They I went to cancel it and they're like, "You want it for free for another month?" I'm like, "Are you kidding me? That's never happened to me in the history of my life." But sure.
Old school L Word. It's really good. I mean, it's trash, but you know, in a fun way. But yeah, so every time I see Mia Kirshner, I'm just like, Jenny. She's beautiful. She's gorgeous, but ugh, she's the worst. So Peter agrees to let Michael pay off the damages by organizing a couple more clubs. Or a couple more parties. And he had earlier made the comment to James how he'd wanted to be the next Andy Warhol. And James was like, well, Andy Warhol is still alive and well, and you know, kind of dismissing the idea. Well, the next scene we see the headline that Warhol died. And now Michael was never as successful financially by any means as Andy Warhol, but he very much was in terms of influence of nightlife was the next Andy Warhol. So
Yeah.
it's kind of like a unspoken passing the torch thing. Have you ever seen the movie Basquiat? Basquiat? Basquiat.
No, I have not.
It's really good. It's based on a true story about of the artist Basquiat, but David Bowie plays Andy Warhol and he does such a good job.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
So in my head, whenever I think of Andy Warhol, I don't think of Andy Warhol. I think of David Bowie as Andy Warhol. So what happens next? Oh, so Michael organizes a new another party. He's going to crown the king and queen of New York. And he's at another party passing out flyers, trying to get people to come. And he meets Keoki, played by Wilmer Valderrama. And again, Wilmer is a douche in real life, but man, he's
God
good looking.
bless America. I know.
He's so good looking. Ugh, he's a creep, but
He's not as hot as Angel, though.
You think, oh, you think Wilson Cruz is hotter?
Holy hell.
Interesting. He's very handsome, but I definitely think Wilmer's hotter. But Keoki says he's straight, is seemingly straight. Michael just goes up to him and he's like, "You can be my boyfriend." And Keoki's like, "I actually came here with a couple chicks." And he's like, okay, well, here, just take a drink ticket and follow me. And he does. He's just like, okay. The power of drink tickets.
No shit.
Yeah. And he takes him over and to James and introduces him to James. He's like, his name's Keoki and he's my new boyfriend. But he asks James to come to the party and hands him a flyer, and then him and Keoki leave. And James looks at the flyer and he's like, it says I'm the MC. He was advertising for James to MC something he didn't even know he was attending. But Keoki, I keep wanting to call him Wilmer. Keoki and Michael leave the club and take a taxi, but they drive and dash at a stoplight. They get out and run and hide in a dumpster in an alley. And we get gypped out of a kiss. I will forever be pissed that they never showed that kiss. And I don't know. I'm sure if I looked it up, I could, with an interview, find out if they actually ever filmed it or not. But a part of me just thinks that Wilmer was probably a douche about it and wouldn't do it.
Ding, ding, ding. Me too.
That's just speculation. I don't know if that's true, but that certainly feels like something that could be true. But they find a little cat, orange cat, in the dumpster, and they take him home and as their pet, names him Sprinkle. Excuse me. Man, you should have seen me on my drive home. I had tried to eat Five Guys and drive. Don't do that. It's very messy.
Yeah, no, I was thinking you were talking about that, and I'm like, screw that. I have to come home and sit and enjoy my food. No way could I eat it behind the wheel of a car.
I do it all the time. I'm just like horking down Burger King while driving in heavy traffic. What happens next? Oh, so we see the party, and Michael crowns Christina and Keoki the king and queen of New York nightlife, which is so cringy. He's just, trying to promote his own celebrities that he's trying to create. At that point, they're nobodies. But once he gets them up on on their thrones, he dumps a bucket of slime on Christina. And Christina like freaks out. She has like a hatchet and she and security has to like tackle her. But it like the whole thing kind of endears Michael to James and they become friends officially.
He realizes how evil he is. He's like, I love it.
Yeah, right. There's a point later in the movie where they're like, we're like two peas in a pod, and he's like, pity the pod. Like, that's what I think of every time I think of Michael and James. It's like, ugh, they're from the same cloth. So we see.
Do you have anybody like that, like in your life that you understand really, really well, but just absolutely despise because you know you just like them?
Oh, God. Probably if I thought about it, probably people I've come across in my past, but no one at the moment, thank God.
Well, that's good.
Do you?
Not at the moment, but definitely one person in my past that I always hated that I related to, but I did.
Other than dad.
Well, yeah, other than father.
Let's see what happens next. Oh, Christmas at Michael's house. Michael throws a little dinner party for him and Keoki and James, and the surprise guest of Peter Gation, who shows up and gives him a grandfather clock, which has to be the weirdest gift to give somebody.
Yeah.
Michael's like, it's so big. Thank you, Peter. And James isn't thrilled because he's tried to warn Michael to stay away from Peter Gation, and which clearly is ignoring. But Keoki and James go in the other room to put on some music, and James like flirts really hardcore with Keoki, and they're doing drugs together. And so Michael comes in, and he's like, "You drug addict losers." He gets all pissed. So he's he goes back out and pours champagne and pisses in James's cup. And as they toast with the champagne, James drinks piss, which is apparently something that Michael used to do all the time. He would pee on people, he would pee in people's drinks. He did that kind of stuff all the time.
Ew.
Yeah. There's an interview in the documentary with Brooke, a character we'll meet later in the movie. But she said that once he peed off of a balcony in a club onto like a new bartender, and she just completely flipped out and was completely destroyed, and she got fired.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's see. Cookie, pee in the cup. Oh, so Michael starts Disco 2000, which is like his weekly parties at Limelight, and he becomes really successful, and Limelight becomes popular again. And he starts getting news coverage. And one of the news reports we see is being watched by Angel, who's played by Wilson Cruz, who's been in a bunch of stuff. He's a that guy. But I think he was on, was he in that show with Claire Danes, My So-Called Life? I think he was.
Oh, I bet so.
I think he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hot, man.
He's very handsome. Definitely not to speak ill of the dead, but he was definitely more handsome than the real Angel. I'm like, man, y'all were nice to him. But Angel's watching the news and sees the club kids, and you can tell he's like excited at this prospect of being one of them. So Michael was known for throwing crazy parties in crazy places.
Parties in crazy places.
Ooh, I'm echoing. Okay, now it stopped. But he threw, I think this is true. I think he actually did try to do this, try to throw a party inside of a moving semi truck. And with Christina driving while she's has a tab of acid in her mouth.
It's the kind of dream I've had when I take my blood pressure pill too late in the afternoon. Like, that was some crazy bullshit. There wasn't even any like lights or anything in the back of the truck. They just jumped in there.
And Angel shows up, and he wants to join the party, but Michael's like, "Will you help me close the door?" And he's like, "But if I do that, then I can't come in." And he's like, "But you'll be one of us, and next time, you'll be like a VIP, very, very important person." And he introduces when he introduces himself and tells him his name's Angel, he's like, "Well, where's your wings?" He agrees, and Angel closes the door, and they drive like maybe 3 feet, and everyone inside the truck falls over, and then the cops break it up before they can anyone gets severely hurt. Then I love it at they like open up the doors of the truck, and Clara, the carefree chicken, just like rolls out onto the ground.
Right.
That's another thing that Michael does. He dresses people up in like these big, like animal costumes, just to dance around the par at his parties. They had Icy the polar bear, Claire the carefree chicken, Hans Ulrich the dog, and they just like rented these costumes and never returned them.
Right.
Let's see. Birthday party. Oh yes. Okay. So then we see Michael's birthday party, and we're introduced to Freeze, played by Justin Hagen, who is married to Miriam Shore. Do you know who Miriam Shore is?
Girl.
Of course you know.
No.
She was on that show Younger, but she plays the guy in Hedwig, the backup singer guy that
Oh, the
Hedwig's married
girl.
to.
Okay,
Yeah. Yeah, Justin is married to her, which I just learned doing my research for this time I watched it. I never knew that. But Michael's like, everyone say hi to Freeze. He used to be a hat maker and now he sells drugs. Keoki shows up and he and Michael get into a fight and seemingly break up. And so James agrees to move in because Michael's like, if you walk out that door, I'm gonna kill myself. And like the next scene, he's like taking a bunch of aspirin. But James is like, everyone knows that you're way too self-absorbed to actually kill yourself.
I identify with this moment in this movie more than any other moment. I'm like, I wonder if he's a Gemini. I'm like, I've done this before. I remember. Fuck a paw, I'd had it up to my fucking nose with him. I was like laying in the middle of the fucking pool room on the floor with my bottle of ibuprofen that I took three of. Still, just for effect. I've had enough. I'm done.
Lacey takes a bunch of Flintstone vitamins and
IOD, are you happy? Are you happy with yourself?
oh my God, that's so fucked up.
I know, but I laid there. I was like, yeah, that's me. I thought, oh God, that's terrible.
Oh God. I went to as soon as he said that, I went to check to see if he was a Gemini. He wasn't. He was a I think he was a Taurus. He was either a Taurus or an Aries. I'm pretty sure he's a Taurus. Yeah, he's a Taurus. Oh fuck. but oh, so James moves in and they start a magazine together called Project X. And Michael comes home and James is there all upset and he's like, I've been cut off, like financially. And he opens up an article in the newspaper that's like, James St. James runs a white slavery ring, sells 12-year-old boys on Avenue A. He's like, why, Michael?
Fucked
Why? And he's like, I didn't know your father was a Project X reader. And he's like, yes, you did, because you sent him a lifetime subscription. So, to like try to make him feel better, he puts on some music and him and James dance around the apartment together. I love that scene. I think it's cute.
That's my favorite scene. It's so cute.
Then later we see them cooking ketamine, aka Special K. Anyone who doesn't know, ketamine is an animal tranquilizer that is used recreationally. It comes in a liquid form in little bottles, and you have to bake it in an oven or something to turn it into a powder to snort.
I just love that you know these things because I'm sitting here the whole time like, what's that? Like anytime there was like a, I'm like, is that a crack pipe? What is that that he's doing?
They do end up doing crack. Michael does end up using crack pipes eventually, but at that point, they're just using K.
Okay.
So like James is in a little apron, and he like comes out holding a glass baking dish full of K, and Freeze is unconscious on the coffee table, so he just puts this like molten lava hot glass dish on Freeze's ass.
Leather pants, no less.
Right. So they're like scraping up the K, and they get a phone call, and Michael answers it, and it's the police telling him that Christina has died. And you know, we first get our glimpse of how cold Michael is because it doesn't seem to affect him at all. You know, James is like, you know, maybe we shouldn't go out tonight. And Michael's like, no, we've been planning this party for months. It's fine. Everything's fine. He just shrugs it off. And they're in the other room, and you can hear Freeze wake up, and he's just like, my fucking butt is on fire. So they go and throw an illegal party at a chicken bun restaurant, which in real life it was a McDonald's or Burger King or maybe both. But
I
they
want
used to
Burger King, yeah.
They used to throw parties like that all the time at restaurants. And Angel shows up in his wings. And he's like, "Look, Michael, I got my wings." And he's like, "Oh, fly away home. The police are coming." So poor Angel is still getting dismissed by people. And doesn't really start to become popular until he starts dealing drugs. And he starts like, and Michael, when Michael first hit the club scene, he refused to do drugs. He was like straight edge, and he didn't even drink. And they said that he used to pretend to be drunk and like would fall over and make a scene and stuff, but he never was even drunk. And I don't know what happened that flipped the switch that made him go from that to like crazy drug addict. But having an easy source in Angel didn't help. Between Angel and Freeze, he had drugs at his disposal all the time. So we see a talk show, hosted by John Stamos, that the club kids are at. And the club kids did used to go on talk shows all the time, like Sally Jesse Raphael and Geraldo and stuff like that. But this is just like a generic made-up talk show to kind of be a placeholder. And it was filmed on the Montel Williams set for free. They're just like, "Yeah, go ahead." I'm at it. John Stamos is a weird cameo, but whatever. And Michael's horrible to everybody the whole time, as usual, and pisses off James. And his mom is there, Elkie's there, and she's just like, "Just let the kids have fun. Let the children play." And John Stamos is like, "Ma'am, is it true that your son Michael turned you on to the drug ecstasy?" And she's like, "Well, he said it was a headache pill." And he's like, "Well, what happened when you took it?" She's like, "Well, my headache
My
went away."
head.
And we see Gitzy, played by Chloe Sevigny, at home in Texas watching the talk show and becoming enamored, just like Angel did. And the club kids end up going on tour. They would go to clubs in other cities and get paid by these party promoters just to show up. And they only stop on this tour that we see in the movie is them going to Dallas, where they meet Brooke. Did you recognize who Brooke was?
No, it made me nuts.
Natasha Lyonne from Russian Doll.
Oh, right. I thought we were talking about the other chick, the chick in the bathtub.
Oh no, that's Gitzy. So Brooke is
Gitsy.
the girl with all the piercings and the braids. That's Natasha
Oh, right,
Lyonne.
yeah. Oh, I always recognize her, right.
And who, by the way, like they have Natasha dressed all frumpy in this, but like Brooke in the documentary is like a big girl. She's kind of built like me, maybe taller. That always pissed me off. I'm like, "You couldn't find a fat girl." I always
Oh,
get mad when
wow.
that happens. But yeah, Gitzy, Chloe Sevigny, you know her from a million things. She's been in a bunch of stuff. But they end up putting on like this weird little show because this club in Dallas was like, "You guys go on after the song." And they're like, "Go on. What are you talking about? We don't do anything." And they had set up this stage for them and everything. So they just go on stage and like Michael sing talks along to this techno song through his what's that thing called? Megaphone. And like Freeze shows his ass off, and Gitzy and Brooke go up on stage with them. It's just the whole thing's weird. And that's when Michael's in his weird little Hitler outfit. Ugh, God, he's the
Ugh.
worst. But it's unfair how beautiful Macaulay Culkin is in lipstick and eyelashes. It's unfair.
His lips are unreal.
I know. Wasted on a straight boy.
He did such a good job. 20 years ago, I was like, did I
It's
not know
true, yeah.
him?
There's
And
a lot of
I wasn't sure.
He was just, he played a like bisexual hustler on the last season of American Horror Story.
Oh.
And a lot of people were like, is he gay? Because, it's a American Horror Story. Most of the people that are on it are gay. I was like, nope, surprisingly, no. He's just kind of little, he's a little fancy. He's
Yeah.
just. Then we see Peter Gation's little vacation. He's was earlier like, he tells, oh no, I remember what happens now. So Michael decides that he wants to throw this blood feast party that we see a glimpse of at the beginning. But the only way that Peter will agree to it is if he agrees that Michael goes to rehab, which of course Peter's going to pay for. So Michael agrees to that. And, Peter explains, you are going overboard with the drugs. You should do what I do, which is like, I give myself a little vacation. I go get a hotel room and party discreetly. So we get to see a glimpse of Peter's vacation through Angel's point of view. He shows up to give them more drugs. And Michael is like naked and like fucked up out of his mind. And there's a sex worker there and she's messed up out of her mind and they're smoking crack together. And Michael and Gitsy are like in a blanket fort doing obscene amounts of drugs. And it's just a shit show. And even Angel is just like, okay, this is messed up. He's like, and can I have my money, please? But Michael ODs. And he wakes up at the hospital. And like as soon as he wakes up, he's just like, he just gets up to leave. And James is like, Michael, you can't just go. You're attached to things. Michael. He's just walking down the hallway in his little hospital gown, just like, fuck it, I'm leaving. But he's just had the idea to throw a like hospital themed party. And I love him and Gitsy's outfits. They're like made out of like doctor's face
I
masks.
was gonna ask you if that was weird that I love that, because I did too.
I loved it. She, especially Chloe. She looks so hot in that little outfit. It's so funny. But at the party, Natasha calls Michael and Gitsy into the office. And I guess Peter had partied a little too hard because he's MIA. And Natasha's kind of taking the reins over and she fires Michael. And she's like, and you can't walk around here naked anymore. And he's like, this doesn't change anything. I'm still fabulous. And she says, you know what I look at, what I see when I look at you? I see a scared little boy. She's like, that's real fabulous. And like, she's a bitch, but she's right.
Yeah.
See. Oh, so Michael, it was officially fired, but the party's still going on. So he leaves and he goes to see Keoki, who's DJing. And Keoki like admits that he loves Michael and that he misses him, but he's still really dismissive. He's like, oh yeah, I'm going a lot of places and blah blah blah. I can't wait for you to watch the documentary because the real Keoki is such a tool. He's like, Wilmer nailed it. He gets them perfectly.
Yeah.
But Michael doesn't, he just gives up. He just walks away while Keoki's talking because he can tell that Keoki's not really engaged. So Michael and Freeze are back at the apartment and Michael has gone off the deep end and him and Freeze are like in a deep, deep drug hole. And
We here at Weirdos do not condone giving your cat cocaine.
oh
Just so you know.
yeah, that's fucked up. That happened does happen quite yet, but when here at Weirdos, we don't condone anything harder than, well, I don't know. I'm not going to lay any moral groundwork on what drugs you use, but I kind of like,
Your fucking animals, you twat.
well, that, but I also kind of draw the line to heroin.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
yeah.
a fair line to draw. Crack and heroin? No, that's maybe not. But Freeze is convinced that he dropped a rock of crack. And how you'd be able to tell on that filthy floor, I mean, I'm not familiar with what crack rocks look like, but all that stuff looks like it could have been crack.
I know.
Like crawling around on all fours on this filthy carpet. You're just like, what the fuck? But he gets convinced that they had dropped a rock behind the radiator. So they destroy the radiator, burn themselves, and then shove their hand in a hole and get bit by a rat. It's a mess. And Angel shows up, and him and Michael argue because Michael owes him a bunch of money and he did all of Angel's drugs. And they fight, and then Michael's just like, but no hard feelings, and they go in for a hug, and then he bites him. Michael bites Angel on the neck like a 5-year-old. So Angel storms out, and James is fed up with everything, so he decides to move out. The limelight gets raided because, like, the DEA, wait, is that what they're called? Drug Enforcement Agency, right?
Yeah.
The DEA has been watching them, how much drugs are circulating in that club, so it gets raided and shut down. No one gets arrested yet, but they shut it down at least. Kyoki comes home and finds that the cat is dead, probably because Michael would give it drugs. So Kyoki and Michael are like officially finished for good now. And then Angel comes back to confront Michael again, and right before it gets to the point where Angel gets murdered, we jump back in time to where we started the movie with James's OD, where Michael is telling James what happened. Now, keep in mind, he gives James like a really sanitized version of what happened. He makes it sound like Angel started the fight and Freeze was just trying to save Michael and all this different stuff, all stuff that ends up not being true. But James ODs and he hallucinates about this epic party with Angel being like lowered from the ceiling, flying over everybody. And Andy Warhol's there, takes their picture. And he wakes up in the hospital and thinks it's all real. And that Angel is still alive. Michael's like, no, I killed him. Like, shatters that dream real quick. And he gives him more details about like the aftermath of what happened. So you notice how they're painting the walls red?
Yeah.
Yeah, to cover up the bloodstains, so no one would notice. In real life, at that point, Michael dyes his hair red, and because his hands were all stained red from blood, and so he just dyes his hair red to cover that up. They leave. Ugh, okay. So, like, not spoiler, what am I thinking of? Trigger warning for just, like, fucked up real-life true crime shit. This all happened to a real person. Fuck the rest of the movie, because the rest of the movie is basically just, like, recapping the murder and the aftermath. So let's talk about what happens in, like, real life. So, what happened was they get into a fight, right? Freeze hits Angel over the head with a hammer a few times. He's now unconscious, right? They then suffocate him with a pillow, shoot Drano into his veins, leave his corpse in a bathtub for a week, with other people living in the apartment. They just put like a mattress in front of the bathroom door or something to keep people out and told them that the plumbing was messed up. And that was the smell.
Ugh.
Yeah. Paint the walls red to try to cover up blood stains. They wait a week, a whole week. Then they went to Macy's, bought a TV so they'd have a big box and a new set of kitchen carving knives. They come home, they do a bunch of drugs, they chop Angel's limbs off. They put him in a box, and I think they put the limbs in trash bags in separate. They don't talk about this in the movie, but in real life, I think they put him in separate bags. Take him to the river and throw it in, thinking it would sink. It doesn't, it floats. Angel floats for a while and then is found, and they can't identify his ethnicity because he's so decomposed at that point. So, like, even though at this point Angel's family was like actively looking for him, they didn't, they thought he was like Asian or something. They didn't realize he was Latino. And so, like, even though they're looking for him and they have this unidentified dead body at the morgue, they were just like, yeah, whatever. Had no idea.
Ugh.
Angel's brother, who looks exactly like real Angel, his interviews in the documentary are so sad. He like goes into Clubland and tries to find him, and it's so really upsetting to everybody because at this point everyone knows because Michael just started telling people. It's
Right.
getting published in Gossip Rags, and everyone's like, here comes this guy who looks eerily just like Angel, you know, crying and upset because his brother's gone. Meanwhile, all these people are enabling Michael and letting him get away with it.
Right.
So, the movie ultimately ends with James turning Michael in, which is kind of not true. I can't remember exactly what happens, but I think it's ultimately Freeze who goes to the cops and admits everything. And of course, James publishes his book. But he and Michael still kind of stay in touch, kind of. He only got, Michael Alec only got like, oh, how many years was it? Hold on, let me see. This is where we get into where the true crime of it is fucked up. At first, they didn't even care. They knew that he had killed somebody, but they were more interested in nailing Peter Gation for drugs trafficking and drug use. That they were just like, oh, well, if you help us nail Peter, then we'll give you a lighter sentence with your murder.
Ugh.
Because Angel was a gay Latino drug dealer, so they gave no fucks about him
I was
whatsoever.
gonna say, because he wasn't a white dude. Nobody cares.
Yeah, nobody cared. So he pled guilty, and him and Freeze, whose real name was Robert, they both pleaded guilty on October 1st, 1997, and were sentenced to 10 to 20 years. And Michael got out of jail in 2015, I think. 2014.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, they didn't just like accidentally murder somebody. They beat him over the head with a hammer. They suffocated him. They injected Drano into his veins. They let him rot for a week and then they chopped him up into pieces.
Right.
And they got out in like 15 years, like less than 20 years. That's insane. That is insane. Ugh. I don't know what happened to Freeze, but Michael got out and had like a podcast or something. I think he had a little bit of fame afterwards, not much. People mostly just tried to ignore him, but he came out and moved back to New York. And then on December 24th of 2020, Michael Alec accidentally overdosed and died.
Shocking.
Yeah, shocker. And nobody's upset about it. I mean, obviously, I feel bad for his mom, Elkie. She seems like a nice lady. But overall, karma reigns. He was only 54 years old. I just, and that's where it's fucked up because, like, I enjoy this movie and I enjoy the documentary and I enjoy the book. But, like, it's all at the expense of someone who died. And all true crime is like that. And ultimately, you know, it hurts the families of these victims. Like, for instance, like the girl, the daughter of the woman who was murdered in that fucking Reese, not Reese Witherspoon, fuck, what's her name? Renee Zellweger show, where she's in the fat suit. That girl is on TikTok and she talks all the time about how, like, that she, you know, her family doesn't get any money from any of this, and they've made this kooky, quirky show with Renee Zellweger in a fat suit about the woman who murdered her mom. You know what I
See,
mean?
I
And it's
just assume that people get paid for stuff like that. Ugh.
no, yeah. And like, I like World of Wonder, the production company. I like the things that they've made, but ultimately, you know, Randy and Fenton, I'm sure, didn't pay any money to the Melendez family for telling the story multiple times of their son's and brother's murder. You know what I mean? Now, that being said, this is a fucked up thing to point out, but I'm going to anyway. James St. James is always quick to point out that Angel, though he did not deserve what happened to him, was a shitty person. And nobody liked him. And that's another reason why Michael got away with it, because for so long, because Angel was gone and no one cared.
No one cared.
That's fucked up. But I also hate the idea of that just because someone died, that makes them a saint. You and I talked about this not too long ago. Like, I hate shit like that.
Me
So at
too.
least James had the courage to be like, yeah, he was a fucking dick. Just because he was murdered doesn't mean he wasn't a dickhead. It's, yeah. But he still had people that loved him, so I feel bad for those people. So that, yeah, I mean, just like, this isn't eloquent by any means, but it just points out how conflicting the whole thing is and the whole discourse around true crime is, because yes, it has entertainment value. Yes, it has educational value, I feel, to learn from people's mistakes. You know what I mean? But there's always a victim.
Oh, it's just like anything, any kind of reality stuff.
Yeah.
My 600-pound life, all that, exploiting people's problems, exploiting people's dirt.
Yeah. Like, shit, I love me some Hoarders, but that show treats people like garbage. I hate watch that show. If anyone who follows me on Twitter knows, Hillary hate watch that show. You know when Hillary's watching new episodes of Hoarders because she's on Twitter going like, these motherfuckers. So let us know, what's your guilty pleasure? What is the true crime stories that you like or don't like, or how do you feel about them? Because I'm interested, because I feel like, especially women our age really dig pod like true crime podcasts and true. I know our mother does. Holy shit! I like true crime up
It's
to extent,
become
but mom.
apparent for the last handful of years that women love them some ID channel.
Hell yeah, man. On the weekends, I literally have to turn to mom and be like, can we please watch anything that is not about murder? I beg of you. Just one thing. Just one thing. I don't know. Yeah, I want you to watch the documentary now. I think you'd think it's very interesting. And it's
Yeah,
short. It's
cool.
not super long. But yeah, I want everyone's feedback. So tweet us and message us and whatnot and let us know what you guys think. Do you have any final thoughts about Party Monster or the case or anything?
I don't know, like it's so heavy, but
yeah,
the movie is so well made. Like it's just so good.
Everyone in it does, like I said, when you've anyone who is listening to this who hasn't seen it and wants to, it is streaming free on Tubi and Peacock right now, as a heads up. But you're going to go into
right now, before anybody takes anything away.
Right, because now the curse will befall it. But when you first start watching it, you're going to be like, oh, this is really over the top. But trust me, it's not. It's real. It's spot on. And it's really well done. But yeah. So thank you all for listening. If you go to the link tree link in the episode description, it'll take you to our social media pages. And like I said, I would love to get your guys' feedback on this, on your stance on true crime and this case in particular and all that kind of stuff. But also just love to hear from you guys in general. Feel free to tweet us or DM us or anything like that. And it's also easy to find our individual social medias from there as well. You can follow us on all of those platforms. In the episode description, you will also find the link to our support page where you can donate to the show or sign up for a monthly patronage. If you can't donate, then please consider supporting us by sharing our posts and link the show to your friends and followers. Help spread the word, get more people to listen. Thank you to Lacey for joining me today.
Thanks. Always have a good time.
And until next time, we are the Weirdos, Mister.